Hi everyone, I'm Lula.
And I'm Jude.
And welcome back to Just Friends.
Ah!
I think we're on episode 27. And our guest is also 27. Thank God. So, yes, Jude, do you have something to say?
I just want you to introduce her.
Okay. For the first time ever, thank you, Jude. I'm introducing our guest. Dun dun dun. This is always Jude's job, but today I get the special honors because the two of you have never met until 10 minutes ago, and I've now known her for almost a year. So today we are joined by the insanely talented and inspiring and, dare I say, wise Faith Zambley, who has totally changed the way I see art and performance and theater in general. Oh my God. She just graduated last month from the David Geffen School of Drama, formerly known as the Yale School of Drama.
Yay!
I know, boo. We'll talk about it. With an MFA in dramaturgy and dramatic criticism. Crazy. So I know her from the show For Colored Girls, which I've been in and talked about all year on the pod because she directed it. And I've definitely probably mentioned Faith before, being like, whoa, this director changed my brain today. She's an insane artist and writer, and Faith, I am so thankful you're taking the time to talk to us today. Welcome.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. This intro is so sweet, and it's nice to be considered wise. I feel like,
oh yes,
wisdom is something that is often hard won and like underappreciated, so glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on. I was scared. I was like, let me say, dare I say, because I didn't want your reaction to be like, oh, I'm old.
Oh, no. You know? I never perceive wisdom being like equated with being old. And also, I am old. But then the thing about it, what keeps me humble is like my friends who are almost 40. And they're like, when I tell them that I was born in 1995, they're like, just like right. The Arthur like fist meme.
They have a crisis.
Yeah, they do have a crisis. So I'm like, I was born yesterday, and it's good to feel young.
Yes, young and wise.
Young and wise.
Do you feel young?
Yeah, I feel really young, which is like very strange. Except when my body starts to hurt, or I'm like, maybe I have IBS. Then I feel old. But generally, I feel pretty young. Like, I feel really curious about the world still, and really excited about many different things. And I feel like being interested in learning and growing is what keeps people young. So, yeah.
Aw. Okay. I feel like you've created a perfect segue into my first question for you, Faith.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not really a question, it's more of a conversation.
Oh.
Which we love to do here on Just Friends.
Yeah.
Okay, but I am very interested in your experience as a TF. Oh, I should say what a TF is probably. TF is teaching fellow. I don't know why they're called that. I thought they were called TAs, but Yale calls them TFs, mm-hmm. which is something to consider.
Indeed.
Because we're special.
Yeah.
Yes, we're special.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I don't think I really realized you were a TF until
we were on the train.
Yes, until literally May. And I was like talking shit about my TFs or something, being like, I can't believe I have to write these final papers for my TFs to grade. And you were like, LOL, I'm grading right now.
Oh, I was.
And I was like, who are you?
The man of many faces.
Yes. And also because one of my best friends, Charlie, shout out, was like, oh, Faith is my TF. Isn't she your director? And I was like, So,
yes,
I would like to hear. Well, first, I guess a little explanation or some wisdom, if you will.
I don't know if I will. I don't know if
TF-ing.
I can.
Okay. Like, what is it, though? Like, does everyone in grad school have to be a TF? At Yale.
No.
Like, what's the situation?
Okay, so the situation is that within the School of Drama, we have TAs, like, for classes that we are in with our, like, colleagues, LOL, classmates, like, that is a TA-ship. But to work in the college, like, it's called a teaching fellowship. And so then you are thus a teaching fellow. Not everyone gets to do them. Not everyone wants to do them, but I feel like gets is the operative word here, because our, like, the School of Drama doesn't have that much money to, like, pay for TFs and, like, pay for TFs to be in, like, other departments. So it's all just, like, a little bit confusing. It's a money game. But my department, because it's, like, the most invested in academia TM, we get the most opportunities to do it. For example, like, all of the actors, like, they only take acting classes. So while I think that they would be great, like, TFs for theater classes, they don't get the opportunity to do it because they just don't have space in their schedule. So yeah, I think it was just like a perfect storm of professors that I had known in the past happening to be offering classes and like asking me if I wanted to be the TF. And I was just like, sure, can we get Yale College to pay for it? And then they were like, yeah. And then they paid me. So yeah. I have to say that I really was not sure what to expect with being a TF. Like, being a TA in my program, you basically just like make copies, take attendance, maybe like post things on Canvas. Like, you're just not doing too much. But this was like way more hands-on than, I don't even want to say than I thought it would be. I had no real conception of like what to think. But being a TF has been like a great joy of this year. Like, I think the folks in the drama school, because they have, and we have lived a lot of life and been faced with the crushing disappointment of reality. There's a lot of latent cynicism, and working with undergraduates is just really exciting and enlivening. And it just reminds me, like, I don't know, that hope and optimism are things that you can hold on to. And it's really cool to see people who are full of possibility and like have not had to face defeat, I think, in a way that you do once you graduate from undergrad. Hopefully it won't be like that for the both of you, but like reality comes in and she's got hands, we'll say. So it's just really exciting, and or it was really exciting to be reminded of like why we all started making art in the first place. And so the first class that I was the TF for, wow, I can't even remember the name of it. That's how wild this year has been.
She's aging.
I know. It's like, can't remember. something about collaboration. So,
yes. No, it was
collaboration. Is it just called collaboration? Okay. Yes. Wow. So sad. And that was a class that was primarily for first years. And it was really cute to watch them like get to know each other and just make stuff together, just like make little almost like amino acids of larger projects. And I think that was really helpful for me to see. And I wish that I had actually taken this class like my first year of grad school, because I was coming in with like very little theater experience and I didn't really understand how theater was made. And I didn't understand what I was looking at. I was like, okay, so she walked across the stage. That's cool. And people were like, this is what it means. And I was like, oh, okay, wow. So yeah, I feel like TFing was really fun. I feel like I was really just there to kind of hold space for their questions and like to kind of help them figure stuff out. I was also just shook, like, whoa, some of you are better students than I ever was. And I'm so glad that I don't have to do these assignments.
I have two like questions that are not that deep, but I've just been always wondering.
Shallow.
One, did you see anyone cheat? And two, or like recognize anyone cheated? And two, I've always wondered this, but like, I don't know if they were like one of the assignments for you was like write a long paper, but I've always wondered, like, especially towards the end of the year, like during final season, you have to write a 9-page paper. You can't read them all, do you?
Okay. So First question. Oh my God. Wow. My brain is literally, it's falling apart.
It's okay, Faith.
Cheating.
We're on cheating.
Oh my God. Wow. I sacrificed a lot to graduate. I sold half of my brain. I'm actually coming from a lobotomy. Right. I did not catch anyone cheating. I did have moments with people where I was like, you are not adhering to the prompt that you were supposed to be following. And you're not doing it in a way that is just like very wild, but I never had people like plagiarize. And we didn't have like 9-page papers for people to write, again, because it was largely performance based. So we would just kind of have people write reflections on their process. And I did read them. I did read them all, and I made comments.
Okay.
Period.
Okay. That, I can't say makes me happy to hear, but I guess that makes me happy to hear.
Well, don't worry about it, because I was not and will never be your TF. So do as you please. I'm sure other people have different ways of going about it.
Okay, I've never taken a theater class at Yale, I think, period. But yeah, all of the classes I've had TFs are like classes that are a pretty big lecture about something I'm like vaguely interested in, but not super knowledgeable on the topic at all. And I go to these little discussion sections with a random grad student of sorts. And I think, I don't know, what stuck out to me in your wisdom slash explanation was that you like hold space for questions. I feel like that was severely lacking in most of my section experiences. It seems like, I don't know, Yale, I think, wants these discussion sections led by, like, you know, people who are kind of between peers and professors to be a space for like active engagement more than you're getting out of a lecture. But like you kind of said at the beginning, where you like thought it could be something more like making a lot of copies and like maybe taking attendance, I think that's how a lot of TFs do approach it. Unfortunately, I'm making like scary faces because it's very sad. And it's really, I think that's where a lot of my frustration comes in, because then these TFs, in all of the classes where I have had TFs, have entire control over my grade. And I'm trying to like totally, I don't know if this is a word, but like de-emphasize grades, mm-hmm. lower their importance and their status. But then it's like, I want to be sharing this space with you and learning things, and you're not really giving me much and then not grading me well, which is super, I think, sucky component of some TF experiences I've had. On the other hand, I've had some where the TF was like, this professor kind of fucked up in this way and it was not nice and I'm not going to penalize any of you. And then I was like, oh, thank God. I totally understand the whole premise here of having someone who's more like a peer and someone you can talk to. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's my takeaways. I have no more things to say.
I think these are all great things to say. I mean, honestly, I think part of the reason that I was like, I got a clock in and I cannot be checked out was because a lot of the material was outside of my wheelhouse. Like, it was stuff that I was interested in, but I didn't know what was going on. So I was like, nah, I got to be out here doing these readings. I need to go. I need to know what's going on. And then there were times where I'm like, I don't actually know what's happening. And the people or the students in my section would be like, we don't know what's happening either. And I was like, great. Now none of us know. Let's talk about it. And I think that my, I don't know, it's a blessing and a curse, but I am just a deeply human person. And I just like, you will never see me like, yeah, I've got it all together. Like, it's usually like I'm actively falling apart. Like, my skin is hanging off. I can't remember questions that people are asking me. I'm just like, I'm so dehydrated. Help. So I'm like, yeah, if you come to me with something, I'm like, girl, me too. Bet. Like, like, it, we're in it together, I guess. But yeah, I'm sorry about these other TFs and them being clocked out. But also everyone's like so burnt out. And I don't think people are trained in pedagogy. And pedagogy is a different like experience or like a different field of study than actually just like knowing things. But yes, your hand.
Yes, I also
thank you. Thank you, Faith. I would have loved to have used a TF. I think I have to say that this one TF, their name is Lukey, shout out. They're never going to hear this or anyone who knows them. But they were the TF who like saved everyone's ass in my discussion section. And I have to say, hearing you reflect, I think you seem to have very similar approaches in that they were very honest. This was in a class I was taking called blah, blah, blah. I've talked to this before on the pod. This sodomy class. It's called History of Sexual Minorities. Yes, correct. Correct.
Nobody
facial
will see
reaction,
this,
babe.
But yes.
Her eyes popped out. Anyway, it was a great class. And this TF, Lukey, was like, yeah, I actually have no idea how I got placed as the TF for this class. I know nothing about this topic. And I'm so confused. And it was so great because everyone was on the same page and being confused together.
Yeah.
And I think that's lovely. I think we need more of that at Yale in general.
I think that this just ties into like what you expect from like those discussion sections, which is that like what I really want in those discussion sections, and I know we've talked about this on the Just Friends pod, is like a place to actually like delve into the material, analyze it, and start really understanding what is happening. And when you have TFs that act like they know what is happening in the class, right? Then you get into this thing where like they're telling you and teaching you, but that's not their job. Like they are just students and they are just trying to figure it out as well. And I had a TF who came in to a pretty dense philosophy course, like really open to like being like, I don't really understand all this. And I'm hoping to learn just as much as you learn from me as I learn from you. And like, that was by far the best TF I've had because like we were learning together. And like, that is what those spaces should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, I honestly feel so lucky because I'm like, wow, I got paid to learn.
Imagine that. Yes, I think to sum up, reciprocal learning and acknowledgement of that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And I love hearing TF's perspectives because most of them, I don't think, in my experience, have been as open as you. Pivot, Faith. You said I really liked how you worded it, and I don't remember, and I don't want to misquote you, but something about you're very human.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say?
You're asking
maybe it
me,
was that.
The great forgetter.
the great forgetter.
No, okay. But I mean, so, yeah, I'm very invested in my own humanity. I'll say that.
Yes. And I think that's very apparent on meeting you and talking to you immediately. Super affirmative. Parentheses, affirmative. And I really want to talk to you about this and hear your words. And I think you want to talk about it. And it is how to say no.
Oh, man. Where to begin?
So when you said that you wanted to talk about that, because full disclosure, when our disclosure era, Faith and I texted about what do we want to talk about on the pod? So
wow, this is like Watergate.
You were like, literally.
We're going to get canceled.
Okay, anyway, moving on. So you were like, cut this all in post. Okay, so you were like, how to say no. So the first thing that came into my head upon reading that text was like, I think I didn't even realize this while it was going on, but I think in rehearsal spaces for colored girls, shout out everyone involved in that, you, I think, made me feel very comfortable saying no. And I don't think it was ever like a blatant no, which is why I didn't really realize it was what I was feeling or what was going on. But I think a lot of times in rehearsal rooms, I am just, well, I always walk in full of anxiety because I don't know, performance and judgment based and just, you know, being a girl, I'm full of
being
anxiety.
Alive and being a woman, being colored.
Thank you. Thank you. Quote the fucking show. So, and yeah, I think that like a lot of that comes from, I don't know. Yes, directors can be your peers, but I've been in a lot of shows where they are very clearly not. And there's huge power dynamic. And I think that's kind of implicit in theater rooms. There are different hierarchies for sure. And I don't know. I think I've worked with a lot of directors who have had a very, very, very clear vision. This even goes back to the whole TFing thing of you being like, well, I didn't really have that much experience directing. And like you admitted that, because a lot of directors come in and they're like high and mighty and they have their vision and like, you're going to do it. And I don't think you ever asked me to do something and I was like, no. But there were you definitely approached like blocking and like, oh, how does your character feel during this song or during this moment? Like very much as that, like very much as a question and an open conversation. And I think that made it so much easier and made the space as a whole way more comfortable for just like feeling like I was engaging in a dialogue and like working with someone on something rather than being told like this is how it's going to be. And then I had to like work up how to say no. I don't know if that made this any more specific of a question for you, but that's what's going through my mind in this topic.
Oh, okay. First of all, it's very gratifying to hear that you felt comfortable saying no, and also didn't feel like you really had to do that during the For Colored Girls process. I mean, I think that I have been in a lot of situations where I needed to say no, but because there was a power dynamic, I was like, I have to say yes. And that really fucked me up in a lot of ways. And I think when you are unable to connect with like your inner no, it also makes it hard to say yes from like a truly authentic place. And it's hard to even know like what yes and no feel like. And then you just get confused and like lost in the sauce. So, I never want to create a space where people feel like, oh my God, I need to be afraid of the person who is holding the space. Like, I would hate that. And I do think that there is a fine line between like crossing someone's boundaries and pushing them to a place that they perhaps like a growing edge, as they like to say. And I think that is something as a director that you're always toggling. And as far as saying no, I mean, I think when I was texting you about this, I was sitting in a parking lot, just trying to collect myself, waiting for my snack pass order. Sponsored. And I was texting one of my friends because she had invited me to something. And I was just like, I do not feel well, so I'm not going to go. And I was like, I just can't make it. And then she was like, that's so funny because my other friend also canceled. And I think this is a sign for me to stay home. I'm like, right. And so I think it's so easy in some situations for me to say no now, because I'm just like, I don't feel well. Like my body will literally just tell me like, ring, ding, ding, go to bed, you whore. And I'm like, all right, let me crawl back to my cave. But I also think that when you say no, you kind of empower other people to also say no. And like, in the case of my friend, I think she was on the fence about going to this event, which seemed really fun and great. But then me being like, oh, I'm not going to go, made her be like, maybe I need to slow down. So I think that, I don't know, I think we're all connected. And I think that watching other people in my life say yes to things that they did not want to say yes to, like, it just creates a bad vibe, because it's like a huge domino effect. Like when people are constantly saying yes to things that they don't want to be doing, then they're cranky and burnt out and miserable. And then everyone else around them is also miserable. And then we're all just sad, which is kind of what grad school was. Yeah, it's giving SOS. So I think one of the exciting things about this new chapter of my life is like being able to say yes to things because I actually want to say yes, and not being like, oh my God, if I don't go to this, I'm going to miss out, even though FOMO is so real. But now I'm trying to embrace Romo, which I saw on Twitter, which is relief of missing out.
I love that.
I'm like, yes.
Please.
Romo. Yes, Romo. And so, yeah, I think the whole just saying no energy is about tuning into my body and what I need. And also kind of like looking at situations more critically. I feel like there were times when people asked me to do something and I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And when I look back, I'm like, if I had thought about this critically for more than 2 seconds, I would have realized that this is not actually in alignment with what I want to be doing or who I am or what I'm about, or how I want to feel. And I would have just been like, no. But yeah, I think there's so much, I think there's a lot of trust in saying no too, because you have to like believe that if you say no, the right thing will show up. And sometimes if you've had continuous experiences where the right thing did not show up, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, I'm going to say no. And like, this actually isn't right for me. And then it also gets confusing at times because sometimes your body is saying no, but it's really just fear. And so understanding like, okay, this feels like a no, but that's actually me being a punk. And so sorting out all of these complicated emotions is just like so much. But I'm really curious about like the two of you and your, the way that you make decisions and the way that you know like something is a no.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I just want to respond to you on, and I'll also answer your question, is like, so I loved everything you just said, and I agree with almost everything.
Ooh, conflict.
But I do think that like, but I do think that the one part that like was interesting to me that you said was like, that you listen to your body and your body doesn't feel good, you say no. And you said, oh, I don't feel good, I'm not going to go out. Which like, I'm all for like being in your body and listening to your body. And I think the more you do that, the more you're able to be able to recognize the difference between fear and just not wanting to do something, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a real tool in your tool belt. But what I found so fascinating about your response is that you said that to your friend. And this is something that I've been grappling with, which is like, why do we need, and I think Lula and I've talked about this, but like, why do we need to come up with excuses for things we don't want to do, right? Like, what if you just know? Like, I'd rather just be in bed. I'd rather do literally anything other than go out tonight, right? Like, and you don't have to feel sick or ill, or your body doesn't even maybe need to feel anything for you to just know you don't want to do that. And it's something I'm working on all the time, is just like not coming up with excuses or like reasons for no, like just no is enough. Right.
Wow. Yes.
And yeah, that was like my only like thing that really came up. I agree with everything you said. And it's hard. Like, it's scary. You have to trust that the other person will be able to be mature enough and thoughtful enough and compassionate enough to respect your own needs and desires. And if they're not, that probably tells you something about them as a human being and your relationship with them. Like, this is not going to be a one-time thing. This will be a pattern. When you say no and they disrespect that, like, maybe you don't want to be friends with them, or maybe you need to reassess how you go about communicating with them or setting boundaries. I don't know.
No, that's real. Yeah. That's so interesting. I don't want to cut you off, Lula, but I am thinking about like, yeah, why do we need to explain ourselves? I feel like that is like the next level of evolution. I feel like before it's like, oh, say yes to everything. And then it's like, okay, say no, but feel guilty. And then it's like, say no and have an excuse so you don't feel guilty. And then it's like, just say no, smiley face.
Perfect. I was going to say that my response to Jude and both of you, I guess, I feel the same way as everyone. Everything I feel has been said. But what I was going to say about Jude's was that I feel like the better word, at least for myself, is like explanation instead of excuse. I feel like I usually am like, I feel, hopefully, fingers crossed, I am in the stage of evolution that's not giving excuses. Mm-hmm. Still, I think I'm more on the explanation front, but also on the whole, like, listening to your body thing. I mean, Faith, you know this from working with me, so I don't even need to tell you, but I've talked about this on the pod that, like, I get sick, girl, colloquially, I get sick so much, mm-hmm. like, more than once a month easily. And sometimes I think it's really just like, okay, whatever, I may be super susceptible to everything or something, I don't know what's going on.
No, that is not it. Let me just be very clear.
It's stress, child.
So it's stress. And the way I think about it is that, like, something's going on that my body, like, can't fight. Like, my body's like, lay, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And when I text you, Faith, about, like, oh, I can't come to rehearsal, I'm sick, you're always like, just go to sleep, it's fine. And, like, I think, but I don't know, I've noticed the whole, like, saying no and listening to my body thing most in performance situations, which I think makes sense. That's also the, like, where I'm using my body the most and, like, relying on it. And she's like, nah, not today, a lot of the time. And I think, I don't know, it's super, I think in those situations, it's much harder for me to be like, no, I can't, and then not explain, because it is like, I don't want to say obligation, but like, it is something I signed up for, mm-hmm. like, obvious, like, to do a show and to have rehearsals. Like, those are all expected things. What, Jude, you're shaking your head.
I just don't know if I agree with that. Like, it's, yes, okay, you signed up for it. It's also your body and your time. Like, you own that. Like, no one else, like, you get it. Like, and even, like, with work, like, I mean, and this is not going to sound great if I'm talking, or if my future employer is listening to me, but like,
shout out.
If you don't go, like, that is your choice. There are going to be ramifications for your choices. Like, that's just, like, life, right? Like, maybe you'll get in trouble, maybe, but, like, you don't have to explain yourself for not going.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I think,
here's my thing. I've been reflecting on this as we've been talking, and I think that actually sometimes for me, like, saying, oh, I'm not coming and here's why, is, like, I'm trying to explain, trying to mitigate, like, hurt feelings, whatever, possible hurt feelings. But I think that actually sometimes giving people context for what's going on and where you're at is actually, like, I'm trying to build a deeper relationship with you. Like, I'm trying to be vulnerable and be like, hi, I can't come because X, Y, and Z, or, like, I'm going through something. And it's like, I want you to know me. Like, I could just be like, we don't need to talk about this. And I was realizing while this discussion was happening that the instances where I will tell people, like, I'm not coming and I won't say anything, are people where I don't care about our relationship. And I, like, don't care. I'm just like, yeah, I won't be there. Mm-hmm. And that's, I really, it. Like,
that's a super important addendum, I think. I resonated with that completely.
Me,
I think,
too.
That even plays back into the TF thing, like, that one TF that I love so much, there was, like, one assignment where I was like, I need an extension, and it wasn't even because I had anything going on, I was just, like, mentally unwell that week or whatever, and I emailed them, I emailed them and I was like, hey, I know this deadline, oh, this could go into a whole deadline rant, but I was like, I know this deadline is this Friday, but I will be turning in a blank document because I need to sleep till Friday. So can I please turn it in Monday? And they were like, yeah, same. I don't want to read. I think their response was even like, I wasn't planning on reading anything over the weekend because I need to rest too. And that, I was like, oh, because, like, we're working together, we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm never going to talk to them again, probably at that time, that was, like, the deeper version of that relationship.
Totally. I think it's an opportunity for connection.
Okay, mm-hmm. So I agree, like, when you said that, all Faith and Lula, like, I was like, yes, like, I changed my mind, like, that was a very good, but then another thing just came up, which is like, is that just an excuse for, like, not hurting the people you care about? Like, is you giving more context and saying, oh, it's because I want to connect with them and, like, let them, is that just really a story you tell yourself, a narrative you tell yourself, so that you can feel comfortable being like, oh, it's that I don't want them to feel like it's them, or it's like, I don't want them to like, or what if they don't like me anymore or something like that. And if you don't care about the person in the first place, then that shouldn't, those questions and those fears would not arise in the first place.
Well, now we're going to get into one of my favorite things, which is the subconscious, which I feel like many of the things that we do are not even coming from an area of awareness. We're just like doing them. And I think there are some subconscious behaviors that are really problematic. Like, I think if you're spending so much time like apologizing profusely to people and being like, this is what happened, and also my dog died, and like, here's every bad thing that has happened to me in my life, and that's why I will not be at your party in 2 hours. Like, I'm like, that feels like a lot. And so I guess I'm saying this to say, I'm just thinking about this after the fact, like when I'm texting people and being like, yo, I'm not coming, blah, blah, blah. It's usually, I'm not thinking like, oh, I'm trying to connect with them. And for the most part, unless it's something that's very specific to the person, if I'm not going to show up, I just won't show up. And I might not even say anything except, how did it go? Like, it depends on what it is. If it's something that we're like, we agree that we're going to do it together, then I'm like, I don't want you like, and showing up there alone and being like, damn. But if it's like, or if it's like someone's birthday party or whatever, but if it's like, I don't know, anything else, then it's kind of like, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it could very well. So I guess the TLDR is like, sure, it could very well be a story I'm telling myself. But out of all of the stories that I tell myself, that one is pretty innocuous. So I'm not super invested in like trying to change it.
What story do you tell yourself the most?
How deep into my psyche do we want to get? I'm just like, I'm looking at my journaling pages and I'm like, yikes. I mean, I think I tell myself different stories about all kinds of things. Less so with like whether my friends will like me or not. But I think I tell myself some stories about how I show up in the world and how I'm perceived, or what my capacities are. And I don't feel like those stories are particularly useful. I think I just have a lot of stuff about like how I'm perceived, whether I'm being perceived at all. And that's really funny. I think it's really funny to be somebody who's like, can anyone see me? Am I invisible? When you're like 5'10" and like very visible. But I don't know. I feel like visibility is often a state of mind in a way. But yeah.
I just want to hear more on the, what did you even say?
Visibility, visibility as a state of mind.
One sentence context is that I am like, way too, I'm thinking about how perception way too much, just the idea of being perceived. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to hear more.
Yeah. I mean, so I think I go through life just assuming that I'm not being perceived, that I'm like not really there. And part of the reason I started doing that, or I think there was a certain period in my life where I was like, I don't want people to see me because the way that they are seeing me is like very shallow. Like they're seeing me as a decorative object. And like, that is not who I am or what I'm about. And so I was like, I'm just going to move through spaces as if no one can see me. And I find that if I like don't want to be seen, I can do that, which is not me being like, ha, I'm doing like magic and here's my cloak. But like, there have been so many times where I will just leave a place and it's like 20 minutes later and people are like, oh my God, where did Faith go? Like, they just don't know because I'm just like, okay, everyone is distracted, I'm out. Or I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like it's an energetic thing. Like, you can make yourself like not be there. Which I, again, started to do because I was like, if people are continuously projecting onto you, you already feel like you're not there. So it's like, perhaps it would be better to just not be seen than to have people construct an idea of me that is fake and like damaging. So trauma. But
then if you're hiding yourself, what is your true self? The stuff like that's the self that's not being projected on.
That I feel has been the big question of the past 4 years, actually. And I think that my truest self was not a self that ever really came out at Yale. But I've been in a process of excavation. It's just like, I think what happens when you're like, okay, I'm just gonna hide away, eventually that self kind of like fades into the background until you forget that it's there. And so then you're just in this like weird purgatory type of place. And just like, frankly, in survival mode, you're just like, I just have to get through whatever it is that I'm getting through. But I think that the true self never leaves completely. I think I used to think about it like Snow White, which is like terrible, a terrible film for reasons of consent and otherwise. And also Disney, please. Wait, did they make a recent live action version of this movie? Please say no.
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
No.
Disney, if you're listening, don't do it. Just say no. Just say no. I'm telling you to say no. But I feel like the true self kind of just like goes to sleep. If we want to really get into the metaphor, it's like, I bit the apple and the apple was poison. And the apple was like being in a situation that could not hold space for this true self. So I'm just going to go to sleep until someone realizes that I'm missing. And then I'm going to come, they're going to come and wake me up. But like, yeah.
Okay. But I'm sorry. I just got to keep being a little analytical here because like,
yeah.
In that case, you're looking for someone to see you.
Yeah.
In the same way that in the spaces that you're occupying that initiated all of this, it's you don't want to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I tell you that I have thought about this, it's a catch 22. And the reason that I started using the Snow White metaphor was because I realized that the person I was waiting for the whole time was me. Like it wasn't somebody else. So.
Wow. I'm just talking about sitting in the feelings that warm, like my stomach just felt something intense, which I appreciate.
Oh,
you love an intense feeling.
You will laugh. I have to say, I don't, there's this, when you were like, yeah, I don't think Yale has seen the truest form of myself, very much resonated, which is super, I mean, all of the stuff really resonated of like the whole, I don't want to be perceived because I think that their perception will be something shallower than what I am. But at the same time, they don't need to know, you know, they don't need to know everything.
Right.
And I, yeah. And I think there's a weird, that's where I get stuck because I think like at Yale, there's a part of me that feels like I'm like expressing my like truest self, quote unquote, requires giving a lot of energy to Yale and a lot. By Yale, I don't mean the school, obviously. I just mean like
the entity, the energetic consciousness that is Yale.
Completely. Yes. Literally like you scary music. And I just like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I want to like protect that.
Yeah.
And then like summer happens and I'm like, where did she go? And that's where it's like, where do we go from here? How do we continue at Yale being like, I want to protect some quote unquote truest version, but then also like finding it again is hard. And I feel like sometimes I've experienced it's like triggered by something.
Ooh,
like an affirmative way. Yes. But then I'm like, wait, I didn't even realize it was God. And then I'm like spiraling.
Oh my
then
God. We're like, yeah, that's how
call the doctor.
We must have a conversation off the record about this at some point, because let me tell you, some of like the biggest spirals I've actually been on were like people perceiving things about me that were like very positive, but that I was like, oh, I've given this up. I'm not yes. she. I can no longer be she. But they were like, oh, you are she. And I said, who told you? And I was like,
yes,
security. Yeah. So yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, I think that the big answer is to get to a place where you are so comfortable being yourself, like the youest you, and you have like, I don't know, enough self-awareness and like self-love to be like, even if other people don't like this, they can go fuck themselves. And like having that inner core and being like, I'm just going to show up as myself and like fuck the haters. But also, I think having the discernment to know like when certain parts of you need to be exposed versus when they don't. And I don't know, people have called me shifty for this, but I think I tend to know like when I'm in an environment where I feel safe and comfortable, and when I'm in an environment where I'm like, it's not it. And I also don't think it's wrong actually to protect yourself to some extent. And this, what I'm about to say is not to be like, oh, like everyone is evil, but I just think that a lot of people are, I don't know, on their own path, on their own journey of healing, and cannot always receive us in the ways that we need. So I think it's like being able to receive yourself, like first and foremost, but then also like, I don't know, being... yeah, being discerning. And I was thinking about this too, because I saw this tweet where somebody was saying, like, I don't want to be one of those people who like moves in silence, like when I'm working on a new project or I'm applying for a job. Like, I want to just be like, yeah, I'm doing it. And I'm like, right. But also, the evil eye is real. I feel that it is real. And maybe it's real because I believe it's real. And like, how much do I believe it's real? But I think I struggle with like, I don't know. Sometimes I don't want people to know what I'm doing. I don't want them to know. I just don't want to share certain things. Like, I'll let you know when I get my acceptance letter or whatever it is. Like, maybe I just don't want to get into it. And like, that's okay. So it's tricky to navigate like privacy and like self-sovereignty and like, I don't know, the space of yourself that is just for you, but then being like clear and also kind of fluid and like how the outer layers that are emanating from that core like get accessed by other people.
One of the things that like I keep just thinking about for myself is the perception and finding your true self and how they intersect. And I think that like so much of how I understand myself is relationally, like with the people that I care most about.
Yeah. Relatable.
And I think that's how a lot of us are. And I think that like one could argue that it is sadistic or really helpful. I'm kind of obsessed with this self-help versus self-harm paradigm. Because I don't know, just like I've been thinking about like I'm living in Arizona for 2 months alone. Like I don't know anyone here. And I think that that's partly purposeful in the sense that like, I just want to get to know myself and like get to see who I am when I don't have these people that I care about that I'm supposed to be like kind of spending all my days with. And like, I don't know, like just like, I still have them in my life, but it's like, they're not in my life. And how that affects who I am and my true self. And like, is my true self different when I'm alone versus when I'm with the people that I care about?
Whoa, you're spitting.
So just all of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
I have something to say. I cannot summarize it effectively, but Jude, like literally 2 days ago, sent me this podcast, The Next Big Idea, to listen to. And yesterday, universe is doing her thing. I listened to it for the first time and I randomly clicked on this episode from May 4th called Selfless, Why, quote unquote, You Are a Social Creation.
Uh-huh.
And it was an, yes, and it was an interview with this professor, Brian Lowry, who wrote this book about, what's it called? Let me not misquote it. His new book is, quote, Selfless, The Social Creation of You. And the whole podcast was about, Jude, I think why it feels relevant now is because he was saying, like, you, quote unquote, you in quotations, is always, he takes big, big conclusions, but is always a product of your relationship with other people and the people you're around. And like the different hats people wear and the different identities people have is always because of their environment. And you always feel like a different you because of being in relation to those people. Anyway,
it's the nature versus nurture thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's partly why it's so startling to go into college, and not just like the transition of like place, but like the transition of like everything you know that is you and that helps form you is slightly to extremely, depending on where you go and who you are. But it's changed. It's different. And to grapple with that is like a really big way of growing. And I think that like that is how humans grow, is like putting themselves in situations where they get to keep finding themselves and keep getting to find their true selves with different people, because yeah, different people evoke different things.
Totally. And I guess, oh my gosh, this is such a great conversation. And I think that I feel like the youest you is not really like, it sort of is. It's not a static thing that is just like frozen in time and space, but I do think it might be a compilation of like the best qualities that other people bring out in you. And I think that sometimes some of those qualities may have been hidden because you don't necessarily have the right people around you to like bring those out and like hold them with care and grace. But yeah, we humans are little kaleidoscopic creatures. We're so fun. I'm like, wow, we're little mammals. I think about this all the time. I'm like, I'm just a mammal. Wow. We're so confused and very excited also.
I've been thinking about this. Like, humans just take themselves way too seriously. Like, we really think we are like so much better, but we are. And I actually think it's to a fault we think this, and it really is actually harming a lot of how society is growing and building. But like, we think we're smarter, we think we know more, we think we're more powerful than an animal, but we are just an animal.
We're just like animals plus.
Yeah, animals plus. I like that. Plus words. Yeah.
Plus words.
So
yeah. Being a mammal. What a life. What a life.
I just think that a lot of my last year and a half has been kind of mourning growing up and like this confusing and crazy process, but also it's scary and it kind of sucks, right? Like, but when we put it in the frame that we have in this conversation, it actually feels, as Lula said, the kind of a privilege to be able to do this. Like, we're just figuring out our true selves, and it's not easy and it's always changing, but like that's a pretty cool process to be a part of and like to be able to experience. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just have a little bit more hope and a little bit more like life inside.
Lua and I making kneeling noises.
Always.
No, that's so beautiful. I mean, I was thinking, I don't know, in Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about how she decided that she was going to be a writer. Like, she knew that she wanted to be a writer. And I feel like I'm super interested in that, like, knowing. And even though she's a writer, her writing takes many forms. And so, I don't know, there's a part of me that is also thinking about The Golden Compass, where, have either of you read it? Or, okay.
No.
So it's like this, it's almost like a steampunk-esque society, like an alternative reality, where everybody has like a little critter called a demon, spelled D-A-E-M-O-N. and your demon is an animal, and it's like connected to your spirit, and like it changes shapes and forms until you're about 13, which is like puberty, rip. And then it settles on like one form. And I think a lot about like finding yourself as that process of being like, what shape am I going to take? And that shape doesn't have to be an animal, but like that shape is fluid and can shift. But I think, yeah, growing up is kind of being like, okay, in light of all of this, like, who do I want to be? Who do I want to grow towards being? And the thing about it is that no matter what you do, you're always you. So it can always be a part of your path and always be a part of who you are.
And with those wise words, Faith, you have led us perfectly into our final question for guests.
Ooh.
On this optimistic note, Faith, well, it doesn't have to be optimistic. Ah, it's optimistic. Faith, what are you looking forward to? It can be big or small, near or far. Mm-hmm. Anything.
I'm really excited for your EP to drop.
Oh my god. You're so federal.
I know. But that's actually, I mean, that is, we'll see when it comes out. No pressure. But I'm going to Italia. To live my best.
You're going.
Yeah, I got the money.
Oh my god.
Yes, to live my best Lizzie McGuire movie life. This is what dreams are made of. And gonna do some theater stuff, like physical theater. Gonna do some singing, some moving. Gonna be perceived. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I mean, I'm definitely a little like, whoa. I believe we're in Denmark. That's crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's definitely whoa. But I mean, Southern Italy in the summer. What can we say?
She's up.
No, yeah. And you're gonna up, you'll be happy.
Yeah, I think I will be happy. And I think that's honestly what I'm really excited about. Like, rediscovering happiness.
Mm. Oh, that's lovely. Okay. Shout out, Faith. We love you. Thank you so much for coming on.
It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
I've just heard so many kind words about you. And to be able to not just put a face to the name, but also just like feel the kindness and put that to the name is a real pleasure. So thank you so much for joining. Thank you for listening, you guys. We will see you next week.
We love you.
Bye.